signal by liking, subscribing, commenting, and sharing this video. Let's get started.
Welcome back. Today, I have Joe Bryan with me. He is the creator of the viral video, What's the Problem? And I am so excited to have you here with me today. So you could share your message. And I mean, it has generated a huge amount of attention because of your, you know, the way you deliver the message. You know, you just cut through all the noise, you know, you just get right to the point. And it's really easy to understand what the problem is. And I just love listening to that. I love that you're spreading the message. You've joined some of the biggest podcasts out there, you know, and gotten a lot of attention for it too, for good reason. So thank you for joining me today.
Well, delighted to be here with you, Stacey. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. How long ago did you create that video?
That was in January.
January. So, okay. Do you feel like what you're seeing now happening in the world? Like, I love what you said about watching, you know, media and seeing them discuss the color of the curtains while the house is burning down.
Well, I can't take credit for that quote because that's from Larry.
That's
from Larry Lafarge. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, I love that.
That's a great quote.
That quote because it's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what is happening. I mean, you put the TV on and it's like the world we know doesn't exist. They're talking about stuff that's just meaningless, absolutely meaningless. And it's a combination of not being aware of it being an issue to some degree and the rest not wanting to draw attention to it because they can't fix it. It's much easier just to give away free money to everybody and try and stay in power.
I love what you said also about the captured media, because you wonder why that is sometimes. You wonder if it's like, what's the purpose of the distraction and why they don't talk about the real problem. But when the media is captured, if you could explain it in a better way, but when there's incentives behind the people supporting the people spreading the message.
I mean, throughout history, politicians want to control the narrative with the population. And so in the past, that would have been the newspaper industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, you'd probably have half a dozen newspapers that would set the agenda and you needed to make sure everyone was on side. And so owning a newspaper was a very powerful position to be in. Right. And you could make a lot of money from being in that position. You could help people get elected, you could help, you know, benefit from favors in return. It's a bit different now because we don't just have six newspapers anymore, you know, 10 newspapers, depending on which country you're in. But, you know, to some degree, you have the democratization of information, and then the cat's out the bag. And then the media needs to be weaponized to a greater extent by the state to then try and demonize some sources of information as being, you know, misinformation or disinformation because it doesn't align with the narrative and they don't have a way to control that flow of information. Eventually they try and create them, you know, like in the UK, and you know, we have the online safety bill, this sort of nonsense where they can get people to take down websites if the government doesn't agree with them. For misinformation and disinformation. I mean, we've lived in nothing but disinformation for the last God knows how many years, but especially since 2020 with all the governments around the world. And so it's doubly galling because all you get is disinformation from the government in the first place. Mm-hmm. Right? And then to brand people applying critical thinking or processing and sharing information that they observe with their own eyes and ears and use critical thinking as misinformation, as disinformation is just outrageous. But this is the world that we live in. But it's enabled through the money printer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you control the money printer, you can control everything. Because everything's just downstream of it.
Yes, exactly. I 100%, I love what you were saying in the video as well, just describing how everything is downstream of the money printer and all these issues you see. Really, they are all related to, the devaluation of the currency. Do you think that the media is sort of the way it looks to me, like it's fighting for survival, and that's why you see this clickbait polarization kind of happening because of the way that media is being more decentralized these days, with people sharing their voices and kind of taking away some of the attention from mainstream sources and kind of catching them in their lies too at times? So,
I mean, at times it's generous. It's like all the time.
yeah,
All
right.
the time. I mean, but you see this very starkly as well. Because if we didn't have X, we would be in and Nostra, I would say Nostra as well, but Nostra is even more niche from a Bitcoiner perspective, but is truly without the
Algorithm.
filtering that we still get on X. But X is miles, is a lot better than we have to suffer on any other platform. But as a community, like we see every single day, if we were to watch the mainstream news, and a lot of us don't because it is so galling or just so apparently false the vast majority of the time, or mindless, like talking about the wrong things. But you see that stark contrast. But then you interact with people in your daily life who are not on X, and they take for granted what is given on the BBC in the UK as the truth. And it's just not. It's just a pack of lies, or half truths. And it's a worrying time to be in the UK. You Very jealous of you guys over there with freedom of speech and more protection from against the government than we have over here.
I can't believe what's been going on over there. I can't believe people are getting arrested for social media posts. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, we've gone full. Yeah, I've got to be careful. Slightly with what
Yeah,
I say. But like
No.
when you're on a list of when you're on a small list of countries that implement these things, and you look at the other countries on the list, you think we're not in a free society anymore.
Well, it
Right.
kind of reminds me of what you said when it's like the fiat system starts to fight for its life too. They start to control like censorship, where it's showing up in all different parts of life. It's not just in money, where you can't use that money to buy Bitcoin anymore type of idea, but there's control in all sorts, like penetrating other parts of your life, and you lose your freedoms, it's a scary thing. And yeah, that can happen anywhere at any time. The more these systems kind of fight for control of narratives, fighting for their survival probably is why it's happening.
It is, because it's the direct result of the money printer. Because you get this sort of whipsaw effect that starts to come into society, and so for those who've seen the video, you'll think you probably remember the flow chart. The money printer causes the inflation, which causes this, it causes that, which causes this, and causes more of a causes more money printing, and then that leads to bigger government. And then the bigger government gets the series of parasitic industries appearing around it, and then more and more control of society through the media and through the war machine and all of these things. Because the only way to keep things on track is to grow the government. Because you can't have less control. You can only drive growth through additionally excessive money printing, and that starts to accelerate. At no point can you take your foot off the gas for more than a short period of time before things start to roll over again. And so more printing, more destruction of society everywhere, things start to fray, and people are unclear about why life is deteriorating. But they know it is. Everyone knows it's deteriorating. But when you experience something but you don't know where it came from, you're looking for the answer. And if you have politicians, then your default is the status quo is not working. Mm-hmm. And the status quo is held out to be, you know, liberal democracy. Right? I mean, we barely live in that right now. It's like intolerant and it's not really democracy. Mm-hmm. But then people get pushed to the extremities. You have the people who have done worse off from the wealth inequality, because the wealth inequality has been driven from the money printer, get told they live in a capitalist society when they don't. They live in crony corporatism. Mm-hmm. So they get told every day capitalism doesn't work. Right? We need socialism. When in fact you're living in socialism already, and that's partly why you're driving the destruction of this. But you especially have socialism at the top for the wealthy, because it goes wrong, you get bailed out. If it goes right, you keep the profits. Right? Mm-hmm. And so you then get this swing to the left, especially with the young who see no hope. Mm-hmm. Right? You have the rise of, you know, populism on the socialist side, which then pushes the people who have done well or can see through the nonsense that is socialism. And this is people in the center or even on the left who just realize socialism and communism just lead to death and destruction everywhere, always. Yeah. And so they sort of go to the right, right? And they look for a strong leader, somebody who's going to, you know, stick it to them, or, you know, blame the foreigners, or, you know, one of these things. And so you end up with a very split political spectrum. And then it's like, you know, the gap between the two becomes massive, but on both sides, the state just becomes stronger. Because on the socialist side, it's, you know, everybody for the state. Nobody owns anything. Everyone's impoverished. And on the other end, it's everything for the state. Mm-hmm. You nominally would still own your assets, but, you know, in the extreme, it's fascism and everything's directed towards the state. So you nominally own it until you don't. The state owns everything in both directions. So this is just, we're heading for disaster, and it is all entirely because of the money printer. So, you know, you look at the news and it's, depending on which country you're in, it's like, it's mainly left-leaning, discriminating against anybody that is not a socialist as being far right, which is just absolutely nonsense. Like, to be far right now is like a normal person 20 years ago. We live in some crazy, crazy times.
Yeah.
And the UK is just like rapidly going off a cliff. And then we're in a debt spiral now. It's, you know, print more money, you kill the economy, you raise the taxes, drive more socialism, you drive everyone away, growth declines, you destroy the free market.
I'm excited to announce my new website, bitcoinnova.store, for clothing, accessories, and even pieces with a QR code, so you can amplify the Bitcoin Nova signal and bring more people to the channel to learn about Bitcoin. You'll also find playlists from this channel and from the Hive Minded channel, the projects I support, including bitcoinblacksheep.com, affiliate links, and everything Nova related, all in one place. And don't forget to check out IllinoisBitcoinCouncil.org. $50 in fiat or sats goes a long way to paint Illinois orange. The greater the nodes, the stronger the network. How close do you think we are to the red button? I feel...
I mean, yeah, it's mainly when are you not pressing the big red button, as opposed to when you are pressing the big red button.
The red button is just nonstop.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at the expansion of the balance sheet and the growth in the money supply, it's pretty much a straight line. It's just occasionally they accelerate it, like during COVID, and then they try and rein it in and basically maybe shrink it a little bit, and then things start to fall over and they need to print money again.
So maybe instead of tapping the red button constantly, they're going to just smash it with a hammer eventually. Like, it'll just be like because it needs to be kind of increased dramatically at some point. It'll almost be like a total vertical. But I mean, the way that they have to kind of exponentially grow this thing. It's like they can kind of keep it rising, but it just seems like there's going to be a huge one coming.
But there's three ways they do it, Stacey, because hitting the big red button is not just printing money. So they're going to print money forever because they have to. It's a debt-based system. You have the ability to do it to finance the never-ending wars and the socialization of every aspect of life until the government runs everything for everybody. That's going to happen anyway, right? Because they have the ability to. But the other aspects is that they remove you from having any sovereignty over your money at all. Right? And that's because of the big red button as well, because they can change the characteristics of the money. Like, yeah. We never had sovereignty of the money other than in cash form. And that wasn't backed by anything anyway. Like, well, it wasn't backed by energy in the way that, you know, we would consider our money to be backed by energy.
Well, and technically you still don't even in cash form, because if somebody wanted to take a large amount of cash to another country, they would stop you at the airport. Exactly. It's not like you're able to just move with lots of cash.
Yeah, so they're finding ways to reduce the surface area in which you can be sovereign. And I'm using sovereign in sort of, you know, quotation marks, because you're not sovereign, right? You're sovereign in a particular area, for a certain amount of time, to a certain degree. That's not the same as being sovereign. But you're right. So they make it harder and harder and harder to have cash, to transact in cash, to harder and harder to access your money that you do hold a digital form. Because it's through layers of permission, right? And then there's extra, not just the permissioning, is then KYC, AML, you know, terrorist financing laws, like as many different amounts of friction that you can insert between allowing somebody to access their own money and use their own money, right? So this is just a series of, it's like extensions of the big red button. So that's the second one. But then go on.
Oh, I want you to remember that thought. Continue from where you're going, the third one. But I just wanted to say that part of the thing about the inflation of the dollar is probably a way toward controlling that sovereignty also, because if they make the dollar more worthless, like, you wouldn't want to hold it in cash. You would want to invest it because you think that that's growing your money. So that way they have it trapped in another form for you, so you can't just leave or just take off and take everything with you that you own.
Absolutely. And this is why whenever they put limits on anything, it's never inflation linked. They're always like $10,000 limits or $1,000 limits. Because in 10 years' time, it'll be half the amount in real terms. It's the same with the tax system, right? Especially in the UK, you have explicit tax thresholds and you just get this drag. Inflation just pushes everybody into higher and higher tax brackets without the government having to raise taxes. The third one is, you know, we live in a scenario where they can print as much money as they want. They can separate us from our money. But the third leg is when they weaponize the money against us. And the weaponization of the money against us is what happens next. It's like, once you have a digital ID, you are then giving the platform to weaponize the money through central bank digital currencies. Now, whether you call them a CBDC or you call them a stable coin, right? Very little difference between the two, right? They're permissioned money, permissioned digital programmable money, currency.
When people start seeing that, I think that's a big problem, because there's so much misinformation or control of media that I think if people start seeing that these central, whatever these currencies are that would be linked to a digital ID, are so different from what Bitcoin is, but people lump Bitcoin together with everything that's digital money. And it's not the same. It is freedom money. It is uncensorable. But people mistake that. And I think that that's something that I hope more and more people find out as the system continues to decline, that they find out that truth, and it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing at all, but the difference becomes starker the more they corrupt, the money or corrupt the currency. But this is a slippery slope we find ourselves on, and different parts of the world are on a slightly different slope, moving at different speeds, but everyone's heading in the same direction. So, you know, Europe is going flag waving, CBDC flag waving into, you know, off a cliff. The UK, the US is embracing stablecoins as a way to exert economic power around the world, which is totally logical for them to do. But stablecoins are just CBDC light.
Yeah.
The same. They're still controlled by the government ultimately and can be changed and frozen and reversed. And, you know, I don't think you'll be attaching carbon credits to them anytime soon, but they will be in Europe. And then UK is somewhere between the two.
Everyone's
heading in the Chinese direction. I mean, make no mistake about it.
Yeah. Are they already implementing digital IDs in the UK?
No, not as of yet. But they've said they are. It's gone off the boil in the press recently with all the other scandals and budget deficits. We've got the budget in the next couple of weeks in the UK, which is just going to be another horrendous piece of work by the government. Just drive more people out, steal more wealth from everybody, and undermine the productivity of society, and leave everybody worse off.
It's like
watching a car crash in slow motion, Stacey. It's incredibly depressing.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, we have Bitcoin.
Yeah. Thank God for that.
we would be living in a dystopian nightmare.
Yeah.
If we did not have Bitcoin.
I have chills. Hmm. Like, it's really, and that's what makes you wonder, the more people that look around and think this way, that they feel how dystopian this world looks and how scary this is, and not realizing that the money printer is behind all of this stuff, the destruction of society and the control over everything. You look around and you feel hopeless, you feel depressed, you feel like you have zero control. And then Bitcoin gives you control, gives you hope. So we're so lucky to know about it, and that's why we want to share it with others and teach them about what this is and why it's different and how it gives you that hope and freedom. But I feel bad, you know, when people don't understand that, because how, like, we felt that way. Everyone that finds Bitcoin, I think, feels that sense of hopelessness and depression. And, you know, it's, you look and you see this stuff and you're like, where's the exit? How could I get out of this mess?
An increasing number of people are looking for the exit.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin is the exit. It's the only, it's the...
Oh, hey, Mel. Sorry, hi, Mel. I think we got our times wrong. I still have another... Oh, she's just left. I told her 12:30 Central Time, but I think she... I'll send her a message soon. Let me just send her one real quick. I'll cut this part out really fast.
Surprise.
Sorry.
Sorry.
That happened to me one other time before.
Are you interviewing her or is she a friend?
No, I'm interviewing her. You know, she created the Bitcoin Boomers podcast, so she's doing that. So I want to talk to her about that. Some, you know, figure out what she's up to. So I just messaged her another hour, so we're good.
She's welcome to join. So,
yeah, right. I mean, we could do a panel. Yeah. We could do a panel. I like doing those. I mean, why not? You know, we can see, but we'll see. I'll tell her if she wants. I didn't know that people could just enter the same room, but I guess now that's happened to me twice, I guess they can. The thing I think is this, you know, the way that people feel, that's the worse the system gets, you know, the more people look for an answer. And I kind of feel bad for the people that are higher up on the wealth scale that don't need to look for an answer for a longer time, until it's time for them to find it. So, you know,
I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. They're more insulated in the first place. Other people are feeling the pain sooner, and so it's hard to have too much sympathy for that relative to the people who are feeling pain. But
right.
But yeah, it's, you're more likely to find Bitcoin when you need it. Mm-hmm. And more and more people need it, because there is just no way to protect your family within the system.
No.
Because if you work hard and you have a job, you're being stolen from probably faster than the rate at which your earning power goes up in dollar terms.
Mm-hmm.
Right. From the explicit inflation, from the semi-visible inflation through the shrinkflation, and through the hidden inflation, which is the corruption of quality in everything. And everyone can feel like things are crumbling in terms of, you know, quality in things like products, right. Quality of interactions, quality of society. It's all deteriorating. And that's the hidden aspect of inflation. But you're living through that every day. And so you're just slowly suffering this like treadmill of decline,
mm-hmm.
with no material prospect of ever having that trajectory change. And so it's like this slow bleed of quality, mm-hmm. of life, and more pressure, life getting more expensive all the time, and quality going down. And that's like a very hard place to be in, very hard place. And so
even people at their jobs, you know, not just the quality of the product, but even the service, people care less because they're doing a job that they despise for not enough money. They go home and they're still struggling. So it's like not like people are doing it with care and joy and love because they are so happy there. You know, they're doing it with like, oh, I have to work today. And nobody's, you know what I mean, happy to do it. So well, they're just lazier. And
this is all just a consequence of fear. Mm-hmm. Like fiat leads to the distortion of the free market, and then the total compromise on excellence. Because as the government gets bigger, bigger and bigger and bigger, the government gets elected by giving out free money,
mm-hmm.
to different parts of society. From first to themselves and then to their friends, yes. All the people who they want to be their friends, mm-hmm. in the broadest possible sense, right? But that distorts the free market, because mm-hmm. you're using printed money,
mm-hmm.
and so you destroy the productivity, and the people who are not dependent on government handouts see the pain because they're paying more and more taxes for less and less benefit, a deterioration in their quality of life. And it gets to the point where some people just say, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? I'd actually be better off not working. I mean, what sort of society gets to the point where you're better off not working than working? And it's like, it's just suicidal empathy combined with, well, it's the big red button allowing unlimited money printing, which weaponizes suicidal empathy to destroy society.
Mm-hmm.
You can care about people. You can help provide a safety net. But the North Star for any society should be free market capitalism. Because it improves quality of life for everybody. It drives prices down and quality up, which raises the quality of life for everyone. And so the free market solves everything. You know, mm-hmm. if you go and introduce minimum wage laws, or you go introduce, you know, DEI stuff, like anything that discriminates against two people being able to transact freely between themselves, you are distorting the free market. You are corrupting the free market. You are driving a worse outcome. And those things compound until you destroy society. And you can do those things when you can pay for those things without end through the money printer.
Isn't it almost like a parent when you have a kid, instead of letting them figure it out and go through a little pain that makes them stronger, it's like a parent, yeah. constantly stepping in and giving them help, but then it doesn't teach the kid anything and you're not fixing the problem. You're just enabling their behavior so they can continue making mistakes. And, you know, it's like bad parenting, really. So it's just, you know, not a good thing, because every time the government tries to help in any way, they think, oh, we'll control this to make it better. We'll print this to make it better. But all it does is make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, and they justify their own involvement. They use the problems they've created to justify further involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no end to that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no accountability to balance the books.
Mm-hmm. No accountability.
And so what's the natural outcome? You just consume everything.
Mm-hmm.
You end up controlling everything. And then you get total destruction of everything. This is like so obvious. It's just so obvious. Like, and that's very clearly where we're heading.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just heading there, you know, year by year, 5% here, 10% there. But it's just it's starting to really compound. People are starting to feel it. It's just like more and more people are waking up, like just normal people are waking up to the fact that there's something not right.
And I think more and more people are waking up to how you said, I think it was in your What's the Problem video, that more people are competing for actual monopoly money. Like it's like, I think once you understand Bitcoin, that's all you ever look at it as. Like I just look at cash now and I just think this is just paper that's worthless. And it's literally the same as the game. And people are just hungry for that. And, you know, they think that'll solve their problems if they get more of it, but it just keeps, it's worth nothing. It's like a toy, you know, it doesn't matter.
It is, but the, yeah, I totally agree. And it's hard once you see the hopes, you have the penny drop, not to just think of it in that way and view it in that way. But quite often people are set up to never be able to escape that, even if they do feel that way. Because they get debt laden when they're young. Everybody in society, or like the vast majority of the people in society, has to go into debt. Because if you want to have a family, you want to have somewhere to live, right? If you want to own your own home for the long run, own your own home, we can talk about that in a minute, you have to borrow a load of money, mm-hmm, to do that. And so you have to then pay that back. So even if you wake up one day and say, this is monopoly money, if your situation is that the cost of living is outstripping your ability to save, your ability to drive your earnings up, you're finding it harder and harder to save. So even if you think this is total monopoly money, the spare amount of monopoly money you have on a monthly basis is probably very low and declining. It's like, there's no way to save that within the system. It's only with Bitcoin. That's only with Bitcoin. But probably to the extent that the number of dollars you owe is far, far, far greater than the amount that you could possibly save even through Bitcoin. Like you are trapped. You are trapped in that system. Even if you think it's monopoly money. Right. And this is like,
I don't know if you think this, but I just have that feeling. And when you think about the 2008 crisis when Bitcoin was created, you know, and the mortgage-backed securities and the big bubble that happened, and it was all a lie and just terrible, the way that the credit bubble and the bond market and everything is, it's like all of this is debt and everyone is trapped in this debt. But at some point, credit is going to be worthless. People won't be able to pay back their debts. People won't, just like the government can't pay back their debt. I almost feel like that will be a reset button too for people. So even though they feel trapped, I think the government will have to go so far to just reset all of it, including themselves. The end game here is everyone's in so much debt, no one can possibly get out of it. So that's the ultimate smash of the red button, would be something like that.
Well, they've always got the option to bail everyone out onto the balance sheet of the government. And so I struggle to see a scenario like that where you have like a debt jubilee or something like that, because
they'll just keep growing it and it'll just be.
Yeah, you just print money.
Mm-hmm.
You just print money. But the way, I mean, we've seen it before. The currency just goes to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just print more money to get out of your debts on a nominal basis. But then at some point you need to recapitalize.
But what happens to the people? They keep doing that, then they're not earning more, then everything costs them more. So do more of those people stop working at the same time that technology and AI and robotics comes in to take their jobs because they give up working? You know, is it all just aligned with this technology boom?
Apologies, my dog has come to sit on my lap. I hope you don't mind, Stacey.
No, that's great. That's so cute.
But yeah, well, I mean, that AI leads us to a slightly different problem, which exacerbates all this. But yeah, in the video, we talk about the four outcomes. There's only four outcomes here. It's like you manage to just continue to inflate away, just have inflation persistently, and that accelerates. But that's not really a long-term solution, because at some point the people rise up and say, I'm not having any more of this. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really a long-term solution. So like, you know, if we say like the currency is going to zero, at some point something bad happens. So like, you know, there's a revolution. I'm not saying this is in any particular country, but if you look back at like all the countries that, where their currency has gone to zero, something bad happens. It's like there's a revolution, the government gets overthrown, or they at some point shut the banks and they reinstitute the currency. Right? They bail everyone in, they create new monopoly money with someone else's head on it, give it a different denomination, and off you go again. Or there's just war. Like, if we can print money, we should just print money for arms and then invade someone else. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what happens, especially when you have the money printer paired with political extremism that comes from the effects of the money printer. That's so if you end up being a communist state, you tend not to be waging war on external people, it tends to be waging war on your own people and just exterminating them. And if you go the other end, if you end up as a fascist state, it's everything for the state and you're attacking everybody else until somebody beats you, and then it's just total destruction. But it's war either way, and there's civil war in the middle. Like, if you don't end up at one of the extremes, or it's just complete bail-ins for everybody and it's theft by the state. So that, you know, the most, you know, you guys have got form for it. In the 1930s, you just stole the gold from everyone in the US.
Yeah.
Right. You recapitalized by stealing it from people handing it in, right?
They convinced them.
Because they said, if you don't hand it in, and you get caught, it's 10 years in prison or a $10,000 fine.
Well, it was a threat.
Yeah, but
I think the government's just like a big gang.
Of course
they're
it is.
They're just gang members.
Of course it is. But this is the same with any government. The government is just whoever has the monopoly on violence in a territory.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Like, the biggest gang is the only one allowed to commit violence against the population. Therefore, they are legitimate. This is government.
Right. They just wear suits. I like to say that. They're like, they put on the trust me costume.
Yeah. But it's the same whether you're, you know, like a tribal chief in like a little village, or you're a superpower. It's the same. No one's allowed to commit violence against the population unless it's you. That's all it is. Right. And then... Yeah. You create laws and you enforce those laws under the threat of violence. If you don't follow the laws, you end up in a cage. This is it.
And that's why I like that, how Bitcoin leads to all these issues in the world when you try to speak up against these things and you have control and censorship, like in the UK. You can have a way to discuss the problems of the world without actually getting in trouble because of the peaceful revolution that Bitcoin is. You could just talk about how that is a solution to so many problems. And then that way you don't have to specifically speak on saying something that might cross a line, because it is a peaceful revolution. You're just saying opt out. You're not saying fight it. You know, that kind of thing. You're not saying actually rebel, but you're rebelling in a opting out sort of way. You're just saying, I don't, you know, turn the other cheek kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Bitcoin is empowering for the individual. The individual can separate money and state. It's like you can continue to print money as long as you want, but just, you know, not in my name anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll live by a different system.
And that's also what I love about the idea of the war machine or the, you know, the military industrial complex is when you buy Bitcoin, you are saying, I think something Jack Mueller's maybe said, that I own Bitcoin, so my time and energy doesn't contribute to that system, or it doesn't contribute to war. That's not on me. I'm like voting against this by owning Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin is a vote for peace. Mm-hmm. Right. It allows you to, it's the only way out of fiat bondage. And it's empowering for you as the individual, because you get to, it's like the scales fall from your eyes and you actually get to see the world as to why it is the way it is. But also it doesn't have to be this way. It's going to change. It's going to change because everybody who finds Bitcoin, never going back. Eventually, it'll be everybody.
I just wonder how long before even those people, the ones in power, try to manipulate and control as long as they can before they even realize that the only way out is for themselves to have Bitcoin and for, you know, to just get off this train and get off, you know, the, like, what they're doing. I mean, how long before they just even say, okay, we're not going to beat this thing, we're not going to take it down, why don't we also just, you know, like, how long will they go on before they also just figure it out, you know, and just, I don't know.
It's like most things. I think it's a spectrum, Stacey. You know, some, like, we know Bitcoin is competitive advantage. You know, the sooner you learn about it, the sooner you think about bringing it into your life in the way that allowing it to impact the way that you think and the decisions that you make, the better you are in the long term, right? Because you end up making better decisions. Like, you live deliberately mm-hmm. with Bitcoin. Like, you are very intentional about what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the fiat system, we have outsourced intention. And Bitcoiners are not like that. It's the opposite. And there's nothing like taking control of your own life to feel like you can make a difference and protect your family. Like, it's stepping away from hopelessness, really.
Yes. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think that doing it for your family, doing it for others, it's like Bitcoin wants to give back. Bitcoin people want to give back and share that, and it's all for love and for making a better world around you. But when you think about why that herd mentality is something that I think when you have groups of people in government or finance or whatever, they've grown up and learned, it kind of reminds you of growing up in school and being that different kid in high school that's made fun of. But if you're part of that herd mentality and part of that group of kids that all thinks the same way, then you're cool, or then you're part, you know, you're part of the group and we accept you because you're following everyone else, you know, you're a follower. So it's like when you grow up and get into the real world, you followed, you know, the traditional educational system, you followed you know, the government, what they all do. You want to be, it's literally monkey see, monkey do as grown-ups, and they want to be followers so that they could be accepted. So I think finding Bitcoin is hard when you're part of a group like that, that you think, now I'll be an outcast if I think different.
Yeah. But the common trait that we all have is that we don't care. Mm-hmm. We don't care. It's like, you can tell me to believe something. I don't believe it. I'll make my own mind up. Thank you. And then, you know, we tend to be pretty good critical thinkers. It's like, nobody has found Bitcoin and brought Bitcoin into their life because they, without going through that thought process, because to make it so central to your day-to-day actions is to have reconciled it for yourself on a fundamental level as to why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you wouldn't be so consistent with it. You know, it's not a fad. It's a structural change. And structural change that is irrevocable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's only a small percentage of the population who have a mindset like that, have a way of processing information like that, and have a strength of character to tell everyone else, yeah, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that, you know, that video of the guy dancing on the hill. And you've seen it, like last, there's like some guy and there's like 200 people sat down and he's the only one dancing for like, like 2 minutes. And then eventually someone else gets up and dances with him. And another minute goes by and then someone else, and then someone else, and then someone, and then everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there will be a tipping point where it will be everybody.
Right.
But even when it is everybody, they won't have gone through the same thought process. It will mm-hmm. be everybody because something changed.
Right.
It'll be everybody because Bitcoin is now integrated into something everyone uses every day.
And maybe it'll take that one, instead of being that one weird kid in school dancing on the hill alone, it'll be like the popular kid that decides to start dancing and everyone will be like, oh, now it's cool to do it because they're doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. Imagine like Taylor Swift. I'm picking out, you know, as a famous person, comes out and goes, I'm a Bitcoiner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are going to be, I'm not saying that's what we want or that's likely in any scenario, but it's more like there are going to be like these little unlocks where people, mm-hmm. hello, Mel.
Hey. How are you? I was just going to write you back.
Great. How are you guys?
Good. It's so nice having a panel. You're kind of just discussing sort of like that herd mentality and kind of like how breaking away from that mentality is a hard thing to do. And you were talking about there was some, like, if there's a video of a person dancing on the hill alone, but then eventually there's like a breaking point where everybody joins in.
And we were saying, Mel, when people join in en masse, it's quite often that they will have not made the conscious decision as to why they just join in. And so, you know, the people who are in Bitcoin now are very deliberate in the decision-making, the critical thinking path and the decision-making they've made in their own lives. And they're very mm-hmm. firm in that view, and that's why they engage, that's why they share with people. But there'll be a point in the not too distant future where people just use it because other people use it and it's normal, not because they've gone through a critical thinking process. They won't know why they use it. They won't be able to necessarily articulate why it's so important for humanity. It'll just feel like, yeah, well, I just use it. Yeah. It's like, once we reach that point, that's great, right? But it's also not too far along.
Oh, here's another thing I think along with that is that one of those sayings of when something becomes mass adoption, it's when most of the world is using it and not realizing they're even using it. So when it comes to something like the Square system being used in businesses, and just yesterday they went live with Bitcoin payments, but even besides that, prior to the Bitcoin payments going live, you were able to convert a certain portion of sales into Bitcoin, up to 50% of your sales of your business. So when people are, you know, all this time I've been trying to convince people to pay with Bitcoin or trying to teach them how to use Cash App to get them to use it at my business. But once you have a Square system and you start accepting Bitcoin payments, people are paying with their credit card anyway. And I'm like, well, I still got you to use Bitcoin, whether you knew it or not. So when that starts to happen.
Did they, or did they just use fiat and
they used fiat, but I auto convert it as a business to Bitcoin.
That's what I would do too. have to get this.
They think they're using fiat, but it just instantly gets converted. So technically that sale, whatever they used, it still went, got sure. purchased as Bitcoin and given to me that way. So I think when that type of system puts pressure on other systems to do the same thing, or other people want that same competition, I'd like to convert a portion of my sales, and it puts other pressure on their systems.
Well, think about it. Who does it hurt? It hurts Visa and MasterCard. And the money that they end up losing is where I can see the fight. I can see them trying, like in 2022, I was in Miami for the conference. Jack Mallers made the most amazing presentation about this exactly, about being able to take whatever payments you wanted and then convert them in, like, you know, you could take the ruble and get the US dollar, or you could take, you know, this and get Bitcoin. And, you know, it was so exciting. And I'm like, this is it. This is what changes everything. And the point of it was, is that amount of money in the center that is getting spent by us, by and then them not instantly settling this. You know, they take that time, you know, like when we transfer money, and like if I send something to you, it's going to take you 3 days or something for it to clear fully. And the banks are using that time and that opportunity to use that money for their own hedging and things like that. So it's like they, when Jack made that, I just thought, oh, this fixes everything. And I don't think he thought it. I certainly never thought about it. Visa and MasterCard are not going to go down lightly. They're just not.
Well, what do you think about that, Joe? Because I think I have a little bit of an idea.
Well, I don't think that it's even registering on their radar.
Oh, I do.
It's so small right now. Bitcoin payments is so small.
But see, once your Walmart, and you do the math. And you look at the billion, yeah. I mean, you're like literally spending just on fees. And if Walmart decided.
It's robbery. It's robbery. But Mel, if you're Visa or MasterCard, mm-hmm. and you see, like, Visa and MasterCard are two of the biggest companies in America. You look at their profit margin, their profit margin's 50%. If you rank the top 25, and I'll get these numbers slightly wrong, so. You know, forgive me. It's been a little while since I looked at. Like, if you ranked like the top 25 American businesses, and you looked at their gross profit margins, most of them are 20, like high teens to mid 20s percentage. Visa and MasterCard 50% each, because they haven't been disrupted.
No,
because they've got effectively a duopoly. It's slightly misleading because, you know, when. Stacey, when you're getting charged, I don't know, 2% by Visa, they're actually only making 20 basis points there. They're making a tenth of that, and 90% of that is going to the banks who originate the transaction on both sides, the receiver and the payer. So, you know, for Visa, they're making 20 basis points, but half of that is profit. Right? Because they get the system. But if you're there and you're thinking, right, we've got these massive, we've got this duopoly and we've got massive profit margins. What's the threat we need to be thinking about? It's absolutely not Bitcoin. And it's absolutely not Bitcoin because it's stable coins, Mel.
That's a good point. Yeah, I can see that.
So like if you're in the Visa war room right now and we're like, oh my God, what's the biggest threat on the horizon? You've got like Bitcoin is like way in the distance.
Yeah, but does the stable coin settle instantly?
The giant hoard at the gates is stable coins.
That's true.
So, you know, there will be a time when Bitcoin's at the gates as well.
Does the stable coin settle instantly?
Yeah. But it doesn't have to pass through the existing Visa settlement network. Well, MasterCard sent my network.
I think so they're going to try to make it that way, though. I think they're going to try to put that stablecoin with another bank or somebody to lend it credibility. And then it doesn't change their fee structure. It just makes them more able to take payments from people all over the world. Instead of, you know, just in the U.S. or just who has access to the U.S. dollar. Well, that just, I mean, that got a whole lot bigger. So we know that the stablecoin is a big deal because just I think of Western Union and I think of people like in my town in Illinois sending money home to their families using Western Union instead of a stablecoin or Bitcoin.
Well, frankly, these businesses shouldn't exist. Right.
Oh, I agree.
Because they only exist because they're protected by regulation. And this is a consequence of the big red button, Stacey, right? You print money, you bring industries closer and closer to the government, and you protect them with regulation. So that, you know, an industry becomes very profitable. They're going to go to the government and say, you should regulate the industry to protect the public. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not about protecting the public. It's about reducing competition. Like once you make it so hard for people to compete against you, you effectively see the opposite of what you should see in a free market, which is prices falling and quality going up. You see prices going up and quality falling. This is why the healthcare system is totally destroyed in America.
Oh,
this is why. This is why the banking system all the payments networks are.
I spent last week in Detroit with my mother, who's having some major medical issues. And what a disaster. What a disaster. Stay healthy.
And I get so upset with the medical industry because I mean so many of the problems that you think it's just they're not taught or incentivized to think about what could have prevented you to get sick. It's more like once you get sick, then we'll just, you know, treat that instead of trying to figure out how to not get there in the first place.
Yeah, but there's a couple of things. There is, you know, what caused it in the first place, which again is all downstream of the corruption of the money. But then your ability to deal with the consequences increasingly hampered because of the lack of the free market to solve these things. Because the free market doesn't exist anymore. It's all regulation
COVID,
corruption.
After all of that nightmare and so much, so many doctors and nurses, I mean, listen, I spent 2 weeks in the hospital in 2020. I had a life-threatening emergency that happened to me. It was crazy. And I ended up spending 2 weeks in the hospital. And I was by myself because no other people could come in. It was during COVID. And these people were wonderful to me. And they cared. And it breaks your heart to realize that there are people out there that want to take care of other people, but then they're kind of hampered by what their barriers are. But you know, for such a horrific thing, I had a great experience. Now, my mom has had the worst experience over the past month. And I realized too, not only, let's see. I'm going to just say this. It's super blunt and horrifying, but they just want old people to be dead. Die. Just die. We don't really want to deal with you. Like, you know, and my mother has. My mother has something. It's called NPH, and it is fluid in the left ventricle of your brain. She has something called PNH.
About how they don't
fluid
want
in the left. Right, how they just want old people to die. And she has something that can be completely reversed. And she would be fine, you know, she would be herself again. And they don't care. They don't care. It's like, well, it's like a whole thing of, like, she fell and she was on blood thinners and they had to make a choice, like, the blood thinners or no blood thinners. So now her heart's not strong enough for them to drain the fluid from her brain. So it's like this terrible, like, a nightmare.
Yeah.
And they would just prefer to stick her over at the nursing place to recover and forget about it.
Instead of trying something, yep. They're just kind of like, oh, we can't, you know?
Yeah.
I see that a lot because it's like when I think about, I see a lot of older people at, you know, at my work. And I just think that there's always, it goes back to the fiat system too, because it's like, hey, keep working longer. The retirement keeps getting pushed further away because you can't afford to retire and know that you'll be fine. So you keep working longer and longer because your money doesn't get you as far. Then you get sick. And instead of trying to tell you, hey, like I've heard of people, all sorts of things they could have checked prior to this thing happening, but they just never knew they should get these certain things checked or monitored until it becomes a serious issue. And then by the time you actually think you're going to retire, now you have some serious health concern that you won't ever collect Social Security, you know, because something happens to you and you worked so long and, you know.
My husband is a boomer, all right? When he turned 60, you know, we did that research. He turned 62 and a half and was eligible. We're like, let's take it. Like, I'm going to take it now. Like, why are we waiting? Like, what if something happened? Take what you can get, especially when you've put into it for all those years.
You know, isn't that funny too, Joe? I don't know if you have ideas on that too, being in the UK, but, you know, you wait longer because you think, oh, if I work two more years, I'll get like $100 extra on my check. Does that matter at that point?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that go into making that decision. For anybody, but Mel, I'm sorry to hear about your mom. I hope she recovers.
Thanks.
But, you know, what,
and
unfortunately,
me too.
It's,
but I think it really is the bigger picture of how they don't have it. They don't have the facilities for it. They don't have the money for it. You know, when I was in the hospital in 2020, I laid there thinking about, because I just was trying to heal and I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't watch the news. And I'm like watching what's going around at the hospital. Like the first most inefficient thing was their food service. Like, why are you doing this like this? Like insane. It's got to be costing them a fortune. And so it was just like little things that I just kept thinking like, this could be this, this could be that. But no one cares.
Well, I think
no one cares.
With a lot of systems, the system delivers inertia. Is it, because nobody goes to work each day wanting to do a bad job. You know, especially in the medical profession, people spend years sure. studying and they go into that because, you know, for the most part, they want to help people. And so nobody wants to be inefficient. But then you end up wrapping people in red tape and you remove the incentives.
And we're humans.
We're humans. We're humans, but if you leave humans alone.
There might be a day where your mom walks in and that one human decides, you know, I'm not doing this or I'm not in the mood for this. And, you know, there's just so many human-esque things that could get eliminated.
Yeah, well, I think that's coming down a pipe with AI, isn't it? But yeah, it's you can never take the human volatility out of the equation with these things.
But I think people forget that. I think people forget that about the human volatility part of everything. And I think that's a huge piece of what's happening with fiat, what's happening with healthcare, what's happening with everything, is that inserted human thing that just doesn't work and start, you know, killing it.
When you feel less confident about the future and less sure in the decisions that you're making on a day-to-day basis, and you have a greater stack of worries because things are moving in the wrong direction, that leads you to not be in a good place mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, you know, you then pass that on to other people in every single interaction you have around you. Whereas if you turn that around and if you're a Bitcoiner and you think in decades, not in months, and you're positive about the future and you're very intentional about what you do, then that can be a very positive set of interactions you then have with other people. And so,
yeah. You know, and listen, I saw with my mother, I'm just, again, being completely truthful. My mom has not always been the most pleasant, okay? And she's not been a happy person for a long time. And I think it makes you want to die. Like,
yeah,
I'm broke, I'm this, I'm that. So what the hell? I may as well just be dead anyway. And right.
Well, they think, yeah, that's so true. Because you're not, look, you don't have hope for the future. So you're, right. You have that depression and you're, you know, there's no point, you know? So when there is a point, you want to take care of yourself and do better for your future. But
yeah.
That's why I think, like, what you were saying, Joe, too, is like, I don't like, showing more people the way, showing them there's an answer and there is hope, spreads positivity throughout the world. It's like there's more, you know, that energy matters. You know, people do affect each other, you know, and the more positive exactly. thinking people and the more hopeful people you have in the world, they infect other people with positive energy and hope and courage, you know, and just like the ability to help other people and just spread that light, you know. So it's like such a dark place right now, but I think, you know,
yeah, I mean, I think it's like Gary Leland, if you guys know, one of the Bitcoin boomers, he owns BitBlackBoom, and him and his wife, they're just killing it. I mean, they are healthy, they are strong, I'm like, you guys look hot. I mean, look at you. You look better than you did 10 years ago. And like, look at you guys. You're doing whatever you want to do, and they are so happy. And like, Gary is going to start a new podcast called the 200 Year Life Project. He wants to be the first person to live 200 years old, and he wants to talk to everybody about how to do it. And I thought, how amazing. Like, I wish my mom felt like that. Or, you know, you wish that there were people that were that excited about just living.
Well, Bitcoin gives you purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And regardless of how old you are, because it's about the long term. It's about like stable foundations. And, you know, if someone's in their 80s or something, you might not be thinking about the long term. But like, but Stacey, one of the, like, with the video, with what's the problem, like, we've had a 93-year-old who's like, I'm buying Bitcoin.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's never too late.
Mm-hmm.
To realize like what is happening,
right,
and to think about the future. Even 93, you'd be thinking, you know,
that's amazing. I mean, my grandma was 93, and I think about her. She was a feisty one at that age. But yeah, 93 years old. You know, it's not just about you; it's about the legacy. Who, even if you don't have your own kids, you have nieces, nephews, anyone that you can, you know, leave anything to in a better way than you had it, you know. So there's hope for future generations, you know. Even if you think, oh, how much time do I really have left, you still can help your family, you know. And
yeah.
I love that you're, you know, just taking the time to watch that video, you know, to watch what's the problem and just taking that time. It's so, I mean, it's not too long, you know, it's under an
Wait,
hour.
What video are we talking about?
What's the problem, Joe Bryan's video. I'm going to put in the links for
it. I'd love you to watch him. I'll let me know whether,
yeah, I'd love to.
You enjoy it. Yeah.
He's got like hundreds of thousands, I don't know, tons of views on it. And
that's incredible.
So it's like he's just, I don't know, the way you explain it is literally to the point, very well thought out, you know, easy to digest, you know, very, I don't know, just really just cuts through the noise is the way I think of it. So that's why it's really gotten a lot of engagement.
Yeah, I'm excited to send it to my dad because it's only been like 8 years since I started to really like get to understand this. And I've been trying to get this man on board, and he's not a dumb guy. He's a smart guy. Now,
ooh, that would be amazing to see if you got a 93-year-old and then you got your dad. We'll be like, hell, let's get a...
This is a good time. It's a good test.
I need to show him that.
Yeah.
Because like something in him has to make it click. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it's going to be.
I'm going to play this on repeat at my salon whenever there's like a good amount of people sitting around. Even if they're not paying attention, they'll start to like their ears will perk up.
Well, I mean, how old are you? You know, this should make your ear. No, not you, but like you're at your salon. Like how old are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so do you want to. I mean, listen, I'm old, yet I'm too young to not have Bitcoin. Like I have to have it or we're going to end up in trouble. Okay.
Well, that's because the thing. You need it for your kids. You need it for your parents at this age. Older people need it for their retirement or for their kids. And young people need it for their future. It's literally everyone needs it.
Well, now, if you're a boomer, you're not like I found in the research that I've done for the podcast that the number one objection is we don't need it.
Do you have boomers on your podcast that are not Bitcoiners yet? And then you're trying to talk to them about Bitcoin?
That is coming.
Ooh, so you should do his video as like...
Dad is going to be number one. My dad is going to talk to Bob Burnett, and I'm going to... It's like...
You should be like, hey, before you join my show, watch this episode. Watch this, what's the problem?
And then yeah, I'm going to.
Be like, this is your research homework before you join me, and then see how we talk after.
Yep. And that's what I told him. I said, you... are going to be, I said, do you know how many people would love to have Bob Burnett explain Bitcoin to them? Or
well,
Larry
just the
Lepard?
Way Michael Saylor gave his board homework, you know, you'll give your find guests that don't understand Bitcoin and be like, this is your homework before you join me. Let's see how it goes.
Well, like there's that. Awesome. And then I met this couple in Miami. They came to my meetup and they're older. She's 10 years, like she's like 67. And her husband's like 10 years older than her. He was a doctor in New York. They both grew up fairly wealthy. And something made them decide to go all in on Bitcoin and put their life savings into it. Now, that's the story I want to know. That's what I want to hear from somebody who is a successful boomer. And has had, like, they'd be fine. They didn't need to do anything. They had enough money to live comfortably for the rest of their lives and still leave some to the family. But they went in the direction of Bitcoin. And they have kept, they keep the majority of their wealth in that. So that's the kind of stories I want to hear as well, because I think that would help parents and grandparents if they understood why other people were doing it, especially people who had, a really successful
That's fiat. A good idea. I'm going to play. Is your podcast live yet?
We have our first episode is live. So you can watch
I want to do like a playlist at the shop every day. And it's going to be like, what's the problem first on the playlist? Mm-hmm. And then it's going to just keep scrolling through the Bitcoin Boomer podcast.
Well, and like, so I want to do like 20 questions. You know, I want to do things like 20 questions with Larry Lepard. I want to do boomer to boomer.
People want to
like
relate,
where boomers
right?
can ask questions. Yeah, I think so. And I just keep thinking the boomers, because of how they grew up, you know, my dad and I were having this conversation where he didn't really realize the faith in institutions. Faith in the banks, faith in hospitals, faith in all of that. It was very different then. And these were, it was like being in kindergarten and having the police officer come and visit the class. And when he left, you as a kid thought, this is where I go, because if I need help or I'm not safe, I can tug on his sleeve and he's going to help me. And you learn that in kindergarten. And then when you, then someday you learn that's not how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And
how
so
do
like,
you feel, Joe, about the boomer situation in the UK? Do you feel like a lot of people that are more later in life sort of thing, are they comfortable in the UK? Are they?
Yeah, is it the same thing, like where they have more money there? Because that was a better era?
It wasn't a better era. They've just been on the right side of the money printer by owning assets for 50 years. That's all it is.
Well, I mean, that's the era, though, right? After World War II.
Yeah, but what would? Yeah, I mean,
we're going to rebuild.
The free market has now been destroyed to an extent that there is no real growth, and the money printer is accelerating the destruction of everything. Like we're over the top of the hill. In that,
but when you grow up, you grow up that way. And this is the white picket fence, and your mom is home, and you have a brother or sister, and your dad works every day, comes home at 5. It's like life doesn't work that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Both parents have to work. And, you know, this is just over my lifetime. I've been married for 27 years, and when we started year one to where we are today, it's crazy, the difference. I mean, and everything.
You're going to love the video, Mel.
I can't wait.
You will. She's really going to love it.
All right.
Yeah, I can't wait till you watch it. You got to let us know what you thought of it.
Yeah, I can't wait.
But at any point, Joe, if you have to get going, I know you've been on here for an hour. Yeah, you do? Okay.
I've got two teenage daughters sending me Snapchat messages.
I figured. I was like, let me just ask him so he doesn't feel.
Wait a minute. None of my kids have ever let me near Snapchat. So nice.
Yeah,
I'm glad
I use it reluctantly.
Are they like, where are you?
Well, we used to have a WhatsApp chat as a family, and then the girls left WhatsApp. It's like, if we want to talk to them, we've also got to be where they speak to each other. So
that's so funny.
So I'm being summoned. Well, this is how I need to go.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, nice
thank you for
you
doing
the
panel. Thank you for being here for both episodes. I love it. And I can't wait.
Sorry, we sort of blended them together, haven't we?
Yes.
But nice to meet you, Mel. And let me know how you get on and how your dad gets on. You know,
yes,
yes, I will.
All right, thanks a lot, Stacey.
Take care. Have a good
See
day.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.